This is VK6ARN News West with your amateur radio news for Sunday the 11th of June 2023.
I'd like to welcome Clinton to the role of News West producer. The process of sending items to News West hasn't changed. Send your contributions to News West at vk6.net and the deadline is still noon Fridays. So please continue to support News West by sending your items in a timely manner, especially if you're sending a script for one of the team to record. Send those as early in the week as you can. So over to you, Clinton, and I'm Bob VK6POP.
Hi, I'm Clinton, VK6FCRC. Thanks, VK6POP, for the introduction, and I'd like to thank the team at News West for welcoming me aboard as your new producer of News West. Now over to Dennis, VK6AKR, from the WAVHF group.
Hello, here is an item from the WAVHF group about the upcoming UHF-VHF Field Day contest. If you are a newly minted operator or just getting back into the hobby after a lapse, do not be intimidated by the word contest. As contests go, I find this to be one of the most friendly in our hobby. If you have been holding off on jumping into this aspect of the hobby, why not give this one a go? Especially the ones with rigs capable of 6 metres and above. A 2-metre, 70-centimetre handheld with its rubber ducky antenna is still a worthy rig, especially if you can find a good, high, clear location. That is how I got started, and I still have my old faithful Woxon in working order. Here are a few tips to get you started. Get your rigs, antennas, battery packs and other paraphernalia ready for the weekend of the 24th and 25th of June. Visit the WIA website and look for the Winter 2023 UHF-VHF Field Day Rules. Work out whether you'll operate portable or from your QTH. If portable, look out for good operating spots, maybe with adjacent grid squares, where a few tens of metres movement puts you into a new contest location and avoids the dead time between same contacts. For example, at Hartfield Park in Wattle Grove, there is the southeast corner of Maidenhair Grid Square OF77, Oscar Fox 77. A few steps to the east, then south, and the southeast puts you into three new grid squares. If you live in the Harvey area, there is another such junction near Lake Brockman. Look on the web for Maidenhead and Levine Central, which will point you to a very useful website and map. Let other operators know that the contest is on and that you'll be taking part. There is a course at Ham College running next weekend, with exams the following weekend ahead of the contest. They won't be licensed in time, but if you know someone on the course, invite them to see what this aspect of the hobby is about. They might be able to do the logging for you, or spotting. Regardless of how you get involved, let's put in a good effort for VK6 on the higher bands for your club or individually. I will give you a reminder next week too, with a bit more of the fine details such as logging. If you are a member of a club, talk with your fellow club members. They may be able to loan you or help you make better antennas to replace the tried and true rubber ducky. Thanks for listening, and 73 from Dennis, VK6AKR.
Hi, I'm Steve, VK6SJ, with this week's episode of Did You Know? Today I thought I'd talk about working at heights. If you're in the commercial radio game, you know the risks and how to mitigate them. Well, you have about 10 minutes to go and grab a coffee. Nothing new for you here. Most clubs and many individual hams have antennas that we want to have at something higher than 2 metres off the ground. Most hams that are interested in HF in particular are dealing with large antennas at heights of 8 metres and up to at least 30 metres, and sometimes higher. Anyone interested in long-distance VHF and UHF terrestrial communications will also be looking for even more height. To get an antenna in the air, we either need to bring the mast down to ground level, so we can assemble and attach the antenna on the ground before putting it back up, or we need to get the antenna up to the mast and attach it at heights. To be able to work on the ground takes a mast that is not only capable of holding the antenna when vertical, but also supporting the mast and antenna as it's brought from horizontal to the vertical plane. This increases the stresses on the mast and also requires a much heavier foundation, all resulting in more money spent on the entire structure. If you think you'll be working on antennas regularly, regardless of the increased cost, this may well be the cheapest way to get your ham heaven. Installing antennas on an erected structure that is always vertical has plenty of challenges, but the initial outlay for the structure becomes far less. A third option is to have something that can be winched down to a more manageable height for the best of both worlds. The downside of a tilt-over tower is that there is a physical limit to the height of the tower that is tilted over before it becomes hideously expensive. The downside to attaching an antenna at height is that there are safety issues to resolve, hence the reason for this article. So, you or your club has secured a 30-metre mast. It's not tiltable or winchable, so the antenna needs to be mounted at height. Most clubs have at least a couple of people who are game enough and young enough to do the work, so all good, ready to roll. Now let's stop and look at the risks and consequences. I think looking at the consequences is actually a good place to start. What can go wrong? At worst, falling from a height of 30 metres is most likely going to be fatal. No surprises there. Our guys wear harnesses though, so that won't happen. Harnesses can break, or if not worn correctly, the wearer can slip out of it during an event. Losing a club member to a fall or injury, you can find more members. We could hang around outside Ham College once every 2 months and see if we can find more members. The fact is that a death or serious injury at your club is probably going to be terminal for the club, not to mention the guilt you all feel for the injured or killed member and his or her family. Definitely something to be avoided, yeah? What is our mitigation for this? You can make sure that the equipment being used is within spec. Harnesses have a defined lifespan and in the meantime need to be inspected by someone who actually knows what they're looking for at least once a year, but preferably before its use. Any intermediate or advanced qualified rigger could do this inspection task. The next mitigation is to have the climber appropriately trained for the task. This means he knows how to wear the harness and how to use it. That's good. We may be over some of the larger and more serious consequences. What training does he need and where can he get it? The absolute minimum is working at heights. This shows you how to wear a harness and some of the legislation about working at heights. Good if you're working from a ladder or a roof, etc., but not so useful for working on a 30-metre structure. For this, you need at least a basic rigging ticket. This is a qualification often held by technicians and allow them to climb a mast and change out a connector or a small antenna. To do more work than this, though, you really need to look at intermediate or advanced rigging courses. So you have one basic rigger or even an advanced rigger in your club. Even the most experienced riggers can have issues while working at heights. Could be a heart issue, spraining a muscle, a minor fall, etc. What do you do then? The law tells us that if you have someone working at heights, you need a plan for getting him back to ground safely. What does this entail? If you think being able to ring 000 is your plan, think again. Someone being held by his or her harness after a minor fall at heights has less than 20 minutes before he is in real danger of a fatal outcome once on the ground. The harness can cause dangerous toxins to accumulate in the body, which once the harness is released, allows those toxins to circulate around the body and cause a fatal shock. Any plan you come to needs to include the resources for rescue to be on site during the work. How do we do that? I don't think Urban Search and Rescue will want to give up their time every time you want to do some work on the club tower. There's a qualification called Tower Rescue that most professional riggers and many technicians have taken and equips you with the knowledge to recover a rigger at heights in trouble. In addition to the training, you need a tower rescue kit which contains rope and other hardware to facilitate a rescue. This allows you to rescue someone in trouble long before it becomes a potential fatal incident. Can't find suitable riggers and appropriately trained tower rescue personnel? The next solution is to look at an elevated work platform. This takes many forms, but up to 11 to 15 metres is often a trailer-mounted cherry picker. You can hire a cherry picker up to 11 metres from most planned hire places for around $300 a day. These can be hired with no qualifications up to 11 metres, but realistically you should have at least working at heights qualifications, so you know how to use the harness you should be wearing whilst working from it. The advantage of using an EWP is your rescue plan then comes down to someone on the ground knowing how to bring the platform back to ground. There are 1.5-day courses to operate EWPs of greater than 13 metres. Okay, so we need all these qualified people to do all this work? We have around 6 radio clubs in the Perth metro area, so that's a lot of appropriately trained people we need in the ham community. How do we resolve this? Well, all the clubs could get together and organise a single training course and split the costs. Another idea for all clubs is to share in the cost of a purchased elevated work platform. Second-hand ones aren't so expensive and the costs of maintaining one would be reduced, given it probably wouldn't be used more than maybe 6 times a year. Might be viable. Maybe we need a VK6 branch of the WIA to bring us closer together so we can make purchases like this. It's a subject for another day, maybe. So hopefully this has given you all some pause to think about the risks of working at heights. If that is all this has achieved, my work tonight is done. Well, thanks for listening again. This has been Steve Kennedy, VK6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know?
This is News West, your amateur radio news on VK6ARN, originating on the News West linked repeater network and HF relays.
Just in case you haven't heard or you've forgotten it already, Perth Tech is on the weekend of Saturday, the 28th of October. It's the last weekend of October. Last year, a good proportion of the crowd brought their caravans, campers and swags and made a weekend of it and found the experience very enjoyable. And a little bird told me that a few people who didn't adopt that option last year want to have a go at it this year. So mark it in your diary, Perth Tech, 27, 28, 29th of October, with the main event on Saturday, BYO Caravan. Now, putting on my RASA hat briefly, I'd like to point you to RASA's online magazine. The magazine's called QTC. And those among you who are familiar with Q codes, QTC means I have a message for you. The May edition of this quarterly magazine is available online now at www.qtcmag.com, and that www is important on this one, just the way it's been set up. It's available in true online, flip the pages on the screen format, and also downloadable as a PDF. That was www.qtcmag.com. There's some great articles in there. We've also been revamping the RASA website, giving it a more modern, streamlined look. Take a look for yourself at vkradioamateurs.org. vkradioamateurs, no spaces in there, .org. Now, members of the WA Amateur Radio News Committee have, for the past several weeks, been asking questions of the insurance broker concerning the new club insurance scheme from the WIA. We're aware that other clubs around the country have been asking questions too. After all, it's a new insurance. There have proven to be some grey areas that need sorting out, and after quite a string of emails back and forth over those several weeks, there's an announcement from the WIA that an online meeting is planned where the broker will answer questions. The Wireless Institute has invited club presidents and they are required to register. If your club president hasn't received an invitation, contact the WIA secretary. That's secretary@wia.org.au. And they've also asked for questions to be sent in beforehand. If you haven't already done so, a couple of your club members should get together and read through the insurance schedule in order to be acquainted with its contents. And you might even have some questions to ask. But read it first. Don't just ask questions out of the blue, as has happened just recently. With this spate of cold weather, I wish I had a very large valve-driven amplifier in my shack. I'd use it as a footrest. But anyway, it's winter, and I'm Bob, VK6POP.
Good morning. This is Roy, VK6XY Victor, with this week's helpline. Apparently everyone had a very good long weekend and don't need any help this week, because I don't have anything for you, either for sale or wanted, or any help. So if you have anything for next week, please contact me, the address being vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. I think it's still working again. If not, roy.watkins@bigpond.com will also work. vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. Until next week, 7-3.
Thank you to the volunteers and contributors to this week's broadcast. Please remember to send your items in by noon Friday. Please stand by for callbacks after the audience.